Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Kevin Boileau, Nazareth Goldhammer. We're here at Epis Radio, still in talking about the interrelational self and humanity's intimacy with nature. It is September 11th, and we're going to just jump right into it. Do not believe for one moment that so-called scientific research papers are true or that say anything valuable about the way things are other than for power, the quest for money, accolades, self-interest. And I know it's hard to take, and especially if you are in an academic field, you're in an academic field or research, you probably will protest what you just heard. But what's happened is that we have let go of the philosophical way of really critical thinking, and the type of thinking we engage in now is all power-based. Power-based. People don't really want to engage in a kind of thinking about the truth that's free from their own professional canon, professional dictates, understanding of the world. It's the hardest thing to do to set aside knowledge and be in a real experience, a deep, pure, real experience with yourself and with the world. So we want to explore that a little bit today. We have reduced our human anthropology to a very constricted, distorted place where our very conception of the self is contracted. We see it as a thing. This is why ego psychology became so important. Ego psychology is not worth much because it, by principle, is dictated by the forces of power in the culture, the bureaucratic understanding of the self. And it will never, if you operate at that level, you will never heal yourself. You'll never see reality for what it is. And you will end up just being a pawn in a system that's already distorted. So when you reduce the human anthropology to this mechanistic place, this stripping the human being from an experience of and an understanding of deeper reality and a deeper participation in reality, people are angry. They're upset. They have no idea why. They're aggressive. They're full of despair. They're violent. They're confused. And then people come along in various professions who tell them how it is. But they tell them how it is as a product of the bureaucratic, organizational, governmental type of thinking that got the patient sick in the first place. You seek healing through sickness. You seek healing through someone else who's already sickened by, poisoned by the same system that made you sick. And who in their right mind would want to be well adjusted in a situation like that? Only the sick. Please adjust me to the sickness. Please adjust me to toxin. please adjust me because I'm passive and inert. I'm a thing. I'm substance. And there you have, in 1784, as I wrote about in the 90s, Kant's motto, Aude, A-U-D-E, Sapere, S-A-P-E-R-E, dare to know. And that means you have to do the heavy thinking. As Max Jacob says, le vrai est toujours neuf. Truth is always new. So breaking out from sedimentation and establishment is not easy to do. It's very difficult to do. It's too hard for most people. They just simply don't want to do the work. So science can be used or abused. But science does not say the truth of the world. That was the inversion of the Enlightenment. Science can be used as a great tool or as abuse. But these abstract principles of science do not say the world. They do not say the truth of the world. They never did. But unfortunately, we were duped into believing that they said the great truths. So here we are now, bodies in space, articulated as mechanism. Mechanism was a philosophical discipline, and it's still, it's actually a philosophical metaphor of the Western world. If you exist right now in this moment, you are indoctrinated by mechanism. If you believe in causal explanation, causal models, you are duped by mechanism. And it's the hardest thing in the world to wrap your head around. And you will want to protest and you want to tell me that I'm wrong. But indeed, it is true. We're all indoctrinated and duped by mechanism. That's why we have pharmaceutical companies. That's why we have all kinds of psychotherapies. Cause and effect. Do X, then you'll reach Y. But it has no deep understanding of who we are at all. It's purely bureaucratic. So the outgrowth of that we end up with a culture that's living in total illusion. And indeed, the ancient East is right. I mean, to some extent, the ego is an illusion. I think it's better said that it's a distortion and an illusion rather than it's completely false. I don't think that second interpretation gets us very far in thinking, but I do think it gets us very far to say that we're living in illusion of ego psychology, illusion that the ego is the self. It's all false. Everything that your government is telling you right now is false. And again, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I have no idea what that even means, by the way. But the goal is to try to understand what is wrong with our lack of intimacy with what we call nature. That's where all this is leading. Why are we so interrelationally violent? Every morning I wake up and I look at national news, and human beings continue to stoop to lower and lower levels of violence towards life, towards other beings, towards themselves. And so that is a falsification of our interrelational self. The self is not a thing. That's another illusion. Self is not a thing. It's not substance. The self is action. The self is meaning and understanding. It's self is process. You cannot be who you think you are without the world being the way it is. The world thinks you. Again, very difficult for people to accept. You may think the world, but that is part of the process of the world thinking you. You can't be a self without the world. So what we continue to do to the world, to everything around us, reverberates automatically into our self structure, into who we think we are, what we think we are. And so it is a joke to me, having been fortunate enough to experience the profound joy of nature, which people are seeking. I finally get it. People are seeking nature. They don't know how to deal with it. They're violent in nature. We pollute, kill, maim, destroy nature. We're desperate to be nature, to be who we are. We're not there yet. And so in the United States and in the West, well, in the East as well now, Nature is considered to be a word that signifies a constellation of objects in a set of objects called nature, or nature preserve, or wildlife refuge, or sanctuary, or the natural world, or the forest. And just the way we talk about nature is already wrong. So if you already postulate an illusion and then pretend to engage in critical theory, the deepest levels of thinking, given certain assumptions about the way things are, you will go nowhere. And this is why we have to release ourselves from everything we know and find a new paradigm, the new paradigms. That is the show today. How it is that we can move out of this radically violent notion that nature is somehow a thing or a collection of things. Nazarita, welcome to the show. It's Monday morning. It's September 11th. Glad to have you on the show. Glad to have myself on the show. Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, it's really interesting about science and truth and facts that we assume or have been told are common facts that actually are not true. And every day I read really interesting things about how science is discovering something that goes totally against what people normally believe or have assumed is true in our universe. And I'm always struck by this, like unexplored places, like the word years ago was there isn't any unexplored places on Earth. The Earth has totally been explored. Everybody has delved into it. They have looked in every corner of this round Earth and said, there isn't any new place to discover. And yet, every week, there are new things to discover. There are new species being revealed. There are new plants. There are new places on Earth that nobody even knew about in the cosmos. Obviously, we've gotten lots of pictures recently that show us that what we held as a conception of the cosmos is actually so clouded and not actually accurate. And we've all seen the pictures that have come out that are just astounding in the universe about what is deep space look like, how many universes there are out there. And I'm always really surprised at this, because the marketing word of science is that science is the end all. It knows everything, and you better listen to it because there isn't any other truth. And yet, obviously, we find that actually really isn't true. I give you just some fun little things that I think are really funny in terms of what were minor funny things and what have been proven false. So, you know, a lot of Christians believe that there were three wise men. You know, than any.
Hello?
And so I find that to be really funny how we populate some writing or something with ways of thinking that are ungrounded in actually truth. They're just made up. And then everybody believes them, and everybody would argue with them, and yet they're fundamentally not true. They're not based in reality. So I find that to be really interesting. Recently, I was doing some reading on what was required for, it was for the dentist. And what I found was all this material up until 3 years ago said that if you had undergone like any replacement surgery for any hip or knees or anything, that if you went to the dentist after that for the rest of your life, you had to have antibiotics at least a week before you had that dental appointment to prevent infection. Well, just about a year ago, 2 years ago, they came out with, that actually is not true anymore and it's not required. And yet, everywhere puts out, almost a lot of dentists still continue to put that out, that you have to have antibiotics at least a week before and make sure you let your dentist know, et cetera. But this is just this little tiny facet of the world that we live in that is based upon conjecture or old ideas that that are not true anymore. Like, they used to think eugenics was absolutely founded in science. And there were tons of people and scientists that believed in eugenics. And yet, we know that that's not true. But if you were right there at that time, maybe someone was one of those people who said, that's absolutely true. Science says that. And therefore, it is true. But you know, this is part of what we've been talking about, critical thinking, is that if you don't explore, if you don't unpack, if you don't research, if you don't really care to look at what is underneath the marketing, the hyperbole of people talking or explaining, then it's elusive. What is real is really elusive. You're talking about nature. Like, we do. We most people think of nature as a thing, a place to go to, not where they are, but a place to go to. It's a state of mind that you can only get to if you went to Yellowstone or you went here, and then you leave it behind, and then you come back to the real world. And the world that you visit, that is nature, everything in nature better be to your liking. And we see this every day with people with ways of being around animals that are totally disrespectful, unenlightened, stupid, and petting bison, or going up to elk and trying to pet a baby. I mean, people are more and more, from what I see, they have more and more liberty to explore these places, but their intelligence has not caught up with the ways that they can explore nature. And so, you know, that being said, most animals now have to be very wary of humans. They all are very wary because humans are very destructive and violent. I find this to be really interesting. And the idea that we need meat to exist, or we have to have meat or we will die, is a fallacy that's promoted by agriculture, by big agribusiness. They have to say, you know, milk, dairy, meat, that you have to have them. And the new white meat, now you have to have pork, and now you have to have chicken. Otherwise, you will become anemic, and you know, you won't live long if you don't have those things. And I can tell you that a lot of people believe that it would be harmful to them to stop eating meat. And yet, the real reality is, if you stopped eating meat, you would actually have a more healthful diet. You would be, you would live longer. You would have clearer thinking. You would have more flexibility. All your organs would be better. And that isn't to say that if you don't provide yourself with the right nutrition, which is another area that these things, you know, you have to take care of yourself. But this fallacy that is involved in every step of our lives, you have to have this kind of house, you have to have this kind of furniture, you have to have this kind of clothing, you have to have this kind of health care, you have to go to the doctor for every little thing that you have, and you have to pay big money. And there are so many other herbal remedies that can actually help. It isn't, and it's to say that when you need allopathic medicine, you're in a wreck or something, then you need it. But everyday life, you can actually have so many tonics and adaptogens that really help your body exist in a state of health without taking antibiotics constantly, without putting on Band-Aids for problems that are deeper than the surface symptoms that are exhibited. I'm always appalled at this from someone, as I know you are, who loves to read. and to dig in and to find out what it is that we're thinking. What are we thinking? Like, why do we hold these beliefs? And my last thought is, you know, Sam Keen wrote a book, and it was Your Mythic Journey. And I always remember this because there's some of the questions in there. It's a book of kind of questions of figuring out what is your thinking. Why are you thinking something? Or are you thinking what has been passed down to you that is false? And I love that because, you know, the typical example is, you know, I cut things a certain way because that's the way it's done. It's always done this way. There's never a different way. And then you find out that this is not true. This is false. This is just passed down, but it doesn't hold any truth within it. It's just it's meaningless. And so why are you thinking these beliefs? Why a lot of people in a lot of times think that any person of color is less intelligent. And you have to look at yourself. Why do you think these things? Like, who told you these things? Like these are untrue. So that's just part of what I was thinking and you triggered when you were talking about today's topic.
Yeah, and so to explore a little bit further, these traditions, these ways of life, belief systems, from all major religions, so I'm not attacking any particular, I think all religions have mythologies that fall into the argument by authority. And sure, there may be some aspects of older religions that we can think of that can be helpful now that we can reconstitute and reintegrate in a new mythology. And by the way, we should all keep in mind that when you go to school, grade school, high school, and whatever books you read, they stop. If you go back so far, they stop. I don't care who you are. It doesn't matter. You can read the oldest Egyptian text, but they're not that old. And humans have been around a lot longer than the texts that we can find. Okay? And so there are tries, good tries, at understanding humanity and understanding the planet and how we got to be where we are. There are tries. But they're not, for God's sakes, they're not the only tries. But some people would actually live as if they were. So if you take a member of a parishioner of any particular church in America, and I won't pick on anybody right now, they have a couple of important books, and they have subsidiary books, and they read them all. They have an understanding of life. That's it. And they don't go beyond that. It's a bedrock ontological commitment. It's a foundational commitment for understanding the world. But if you don't start critical processes about the meaning and the value of those bedrock axioms, then you cannot, by definition, engage in critical thinking. You're just a child. To willy-nilly adopt a religion and not really deeply, deeply challenge that religion makes you a child, makes you a three-year-old, in my view. But that's what we're left with right now. And so it's the hardest thing in the world to try to blow the lid off of your own traditions, how you were raised. But what's really interesting is that we have created an over-reliance on the Western canon, if you're a Westerner, that you read all the great books of literature and philosophy, you know, whoever's your famous writer, and that becomes the way you think about the world. But those are just tries. I call them attempts to understand the world. Some of them are really amazing. Some of them are less amazing. But you have to look at what we have now. We do have enough evidence of our Earth situation being in a state of decline, that we would want to think about how we think about things. It's really true. You can't, and I know this for sure, 100%. I'm aware of this, that if you exist in a system, whatever it is, a system, sometimes, if not all the time, to solve the problems of that system, you have to reinvent the system. Otherwise, what you're doing is you're pushing around dirt. You're not really solving anything. You might make it look like you're working on a problem. And that's the problem with technology. Like Nazarita, you were showing me an article yesterday that and I've been hearing about this, some people want to create some atmospheric filter to block the sun. That's their technological solution to global warming. It just gets worse. And I keep thinking about, you know, some of the things you learn as a child about, you know, making a mistake and then you have to cover up. If you don't own it, you end up covering up that mistake with another mistake and another mistake. And all of a sudden, you've taken a problem that was simple and you've turned it into a complexity. This is the human experience on the planet. And there are people, I call it, and most people won't relate to this word, but it's to be occultist. And what that means is to answer any important meaning question or important life question, you rely on what somebody else said, what the priest said, or the guru, the wise person. But you don't think. And again, those are just tries. But what happens is that we always have to have a very skeptical eye about theory. And when I write theory, I write it with a skepticism, and I write it provisionally because I know it's a stand-in. It's a vehicle. Theory and theoretical knowledge is a stand-in. It's only provisional. It's operative. It's a function. But it's not reality. And that's for younger thinkers and maybe a lot of older thinkers, it's the hardest thing to accept. You can't rely on theory. You can use it, but you can't rely on it. And so when we talk about theories of nature or wildlife management or forest management, those all come from ideologies. In America, they come from the ideology of use and taking and acquiring, commodification. National parks have become things. It is a great sadness. You know, you drive inside a national park, you pay money, and you're in a boundary, and it's a thing, or it's a set of things. But it's all been reified into a system that's controlled by money and theory. When really all we need to do is to stay out. I would be one of the first persons who would sign up for not allowing anybody into the depths of the forest or the backcountry, except under very, very tightly controlled conditions. We need to stay away. We need to stop pissing and shitting on the ecosystems. Case in point, mountain biking has ruined much of Colorado. Now, to go to Colorado in the United States and say that, they will attack you. But everybody got on the bandwagon that cycling up in the mountains, mountain biking, is a really cool thing to do. And they've developed teams and competitions and monies and marketing trails. that bisect and trisect and quadrisect ecosystems that are inhabited by many, many different species, including larger land mammals. They don't want us there. And somebody did a study about why the elk population and some of the deer populations were declining in the mountains of Colorado. Well, of course, all the wildlife biologists said, well, it must be the wolves or the mountain lions or the coyotes or the bears. So let's go kill those predators. Let's go shoot them, trap them, kill them. Let's shed their blood. And then that way, the prey populations will increase. And, oh, we can invite more hunters into the state to make more money. And there were a few research studies. Careful. A couple things. One, there's absolute evidence that when humans go into the outdoors, they affect animals. You put a wildlife camera, they don't want your camera, and they don't want your presence. If you think that predators don't hear you or smell you, you're in la-la land. They know when you're there, way before you would ever see them. It's their backyard. And the second thing that we discovered is that it was humans who were destroying the prey populations, mountain biking. Running these famous little races in the mountains. Everybody wears a nice, big, colorful suit and a number, and there's money and prizes. But what about the animals? But that's my point, Nazarita, is that we create these ideologies. Here's one. It is the mountain biking ideology. It's going on in Montana right now. They call it, it's part of mixed use. And there are people, it actually costs quite a bit of money to own really good, solid mountain bikes. So it's not for people without means, it's for the wealthy. And so they've created these coalitions and lobby groups where they pretend like they're somehow doing something good for the environment. And it's good for people to be in nature. To be in nature. You see, this is what we're talking about. Be in nature. But it's how we're in nature. Just like I've seen a couple of videos of nitwits coming into some of the backcountry in Montana. They were being filmed. They were out looking for wolves. And they walked right by a wolf pack. So it's the how. Nature is not a thing. Nature is a transcendental structure. It's what I call a horizon of meaning. Nature is a word that means the horizon of significance. I am nature. I am God. I am God and I am nature. And I'm God and I am nature because my body is a material element of my being, and it is in the world. I have a body. I am my body. I live my body. And my body participates in the world at a very intimate level. And believe it or not, the great Merleau-Ponty had started to work on this in his Phenomenology of Perception. His life was cut short. If he had another 40 years, he would have revolutionized a lot of thinking. And this is why we're seeking embodied phenomenology. Phenomenologies of life must include a philosophy of the body. And my body is in the world before I know it. My body is in the world before I'm aware of it or can think it. I'm already in the world. Nazarita, this is the thing that gets me the most. We are already in in and of and a part of all of the natural world. We are all nature. And in fact, if you push that thinking to its limit, you would never even use the phrase natural world. You wouldn't use it. The fact that we even have a phrase natural world means we've already created a schism in thinking. Well, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm reminded of E.O. Wilson's book, Half Earth. There's a E.O. Wilson Foundation.org. And, you know, it's like what we're faced with is a complete loss of biodiversity, which is really the very fabric of our Earth and how we are damaging the planet, killing other species. And this relates exactly to what you were talking about, like close off part of Yellowstone. Instead, let's focus on making the places that we live filled with more biodiversity, more green. Let's change the way we drive our cars. Let's change the way we use fossil fuels. We have the ability to do that. And I think that most people find that daunting, find it actually daunting to give up even the smallest thing that they are used to. And yet, you know, some of the big ideas are half of the Earth's land and half of the Earth's seas to promote and keep and sustain biodiversity, which in fact keeps humans alive. And yet, I see it as something, this is relates to science again, things that we don't know that we could actually be pursuing instead of pursuing things that are just materialistic usage of everything on the earth, decimating what we know, that we could focus our attention on so much more that is important and understanding of other animals. Like I know, I'll give you some interesting facts, because you know that right now there's this huge octopus farm that people want to eat octopus. And yet, you know, we know that octopus have, they're sensitive, they have knowledge, they have brains, they actually have they have three hearts, which is really interesting. Here's some other things that, you know, our sense of awe and wonder in our natural world that we are forcefully killing because we choose to ignore them. Like polar bears have black skin. Butterflies taste with their feet. And, you know, little birds and things that go fast and have a fast metabolism actually see things in slower motion. And you brought up a really interesting thing about animals destroying cameras in the wild, because I watch a lot of those cameras that are set up, and they're positioned just to see who walks through. They're not for hunting or anything, and yet every animal that goes by them is aware of them. Like, they're aware. Like, this is an inanimate object sitting there just recording. No one's behind it. You know, no body is behind it. It's just this, and yet they're aware of their surroundings. Unlike humans, humans are totally unaware of their surroundings. And so how do we set aside half the earth? How do we set aside half the oceans? And we have to come to the realization that we are fishing the world's oceans to extinction. And so we have to get rid of the nets that we use. We have to stop fishing and hunting dolphins and whales, because that's another fallacy that people believe, oh, that's their culture. They have to sustain their culture. Instead of looking at what are the good things you can sustain that you've learned, instead it's like hook, line, and sinker. You take everything that you did when you were, you know, 300 years ago, and you're still going to do it now, which is partly hunting. I hear hunters all the time killing grizzlies because they're surprised. I'm thinking, what were they doing hunting? Hunting for what? They don't need food. It's the thrill of killing that humans have, the thrill of the kill. I know a lot of humans would say, well, we're animals. We're just like a tiger. We have to hunt. But that is actually so untrue. And it disturbs me greatly to think that we are pursuing a path that is the ultimate destruction of not only living beings on Earth, but of ourselves. It's like this masochistic, sadistic way of thinking that we have to destroy everything, and then we want to go to Mars. Well, let's go to the moon. Let's go to Mars. Let's get someplace new to destroy. Instead, let's look at our cities. Let's look at housing everybody. Let's look at providing different kind of health care. Let's look at sustainability of food. Let's get rid of these huge agribusinesses that insist on having cows everywhere in every space that they can find, and let people stop eating the things that are causing the destruction. You know, if you just take that little tiny thing and say, stop eating this, it could create a revolution. And plant-based diets have created somewhat of a revolution already in saying, we don't want to eat that. Because once you say that, they will stop producing it. They will stop producing it. Sure as marketing, as we know all marketing, if you stop doing it, they won't make it. If you stop eating it, it will be gone. And so we have that power as a community, as a person, to stop doing what will make the change.
So here's the thing. The more I talk about it, the more I listen, where I realize how squashed we are by power of culture, society, family. I mean, families are oppressive. They get us to do the same thing that we've always done, to live in tradition. And people do that. People are unhappy, a lot of them in their families, even abusive, neglectful families. But cultures, religious groups, spiritual groups, cultural groups, they're hanging on to the past. And what about forward moving? What about thinking of the future? Because right now what we've created, and I'm willing to take this on, I'm willing to fashion arguments about it with people and in a polemic, I don't think that the philosophies of the past have done such a great job. Or the religions. I don't think so. I think that we've had a trickling of brilliant thought in the last 200 years, but very seminal. But there's much more work that needs to be done about the future if we're going to survive. We cannot hang on to past mythology. If you're a person who studies mythology in any psychoanalytic, psychotherapeutic, world, dream work, any of that, all of that needs to be highly examined and highly challenged, because it's not getting us very far right now. So, wow, we are almost out of time again. Can you believe that? Nazarita, we're almost out of time
yeah.
again.
Why don't you bring us to a close?
Did you want to make 20 seconds
ahead.
If you want?
No, you take it.
I just want to encourage people to go onto Amazon.com, click on books, click on Radio Conversations series, click on my name, and you will find 16 of our volumes. Please buy one. That money goes to keep us on the air. Next year, we're going to start producing a whole new slug of volumes, probably 7 or 8, 9, even 10 volumes. New, brand new. We're out of time for today. Try to think the new, and we'll see you all back here and hear you all back here and feel you all back here next week. Thank you.